Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. If you're on Instagram, you may have come across accounts with names like Too Many Flops or Feminism Flops. Scrolling through, it looks like just a bunch of memes and jokes about politics. But if you look a little closer, you might notice that some of these accounts have thousands of followers, and they're engaged followers. Take one post, for example. It's an embroidery circle with the words sugar, spice, abolish, ice in purple and pink thread. The caption reads, "As a Mexican American, I believe ICE is necessary as immigration is growing." In the comments below, one user writes, "Don't abolish it, reform it." Another user responds, "Immigration isn't growing, for what it's worth."
Flop accounts are Instagram accounts. They're collectively managed by groups of teenagers. And what they do is basically post content for discussion. They're almost like little mini forums or subreddits.
That's Taylor Lorenz, a staff writer at The Atlantic, and she's been looking at how these so-called flop accounts on Instagram are becoming a venue for young people to talk about the news in a non-traditional way.
Around a year and a half ago, you know, after the election and after, I think, more maybe political discourse sort of entered the conversation and spilled its way onto Instagram, a lot of the accounts have basically become places to discuss really hot button issues and news events. So, for instance, you know, maybe President Trump issues some kind of immigration order. A teen may post an image or picture of President Trump or a screenshot of a news article about it. And if they disagree with it, they'll say, you know, this is a flop. And here's why I think why, or just like major flop. And basically saying, I don't agree with this and it's bad. And in the comments below, other teens will, you know, discuss whether or not they agree and why.
Is this something that's ideologically diverse as well? So it's not just a bunch of people. One of the biggest failings, I think, of social media that people often complain about is that it's very isolated, right? You're only hearing from the same types of people. So if you post something, most of your friends will agree with it. This seems to be that it's a much more ideologically diverse platform or attempt at being ideologically diverse.
I think, I mean, one really interesting thing, and I talked to a couple of professors about this, about teenagers, is their ideas are so malleable. I mean, they haven't yet totally formed their political beliefs. A lot of their political beliefs originate from their parents, but they're very open to new ideas for the most part. But, you know, I interviewed several teens that actually had changed their mind on major issues, you know, related to information that they've learned from flop accounts. And that can go both ways. You know, you've seen one teen who I interviewed, you know, now believes in transgender rights and thinks that they deserve, transgender people deserve a place in the LGBT community.
And that, let's pause right there, because you're saying that people are actually thinking through some really complicated issues on Instagram and kind of changing hearts and minds. I mean, isn't that what a lot of politicians are trying to do?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's what they would like to do. Unfortunately, I mean, part of the reason that these kids, I think, trust the information more, and they absolutely, you know, they on a whole trust the information more that they're going to find on flop accounts than the what they, you know, think of as the mainstream media, or even their teachers, because it comes from their peers and because they think it can be collectively vetted by their peers. A lot of these kids also have, you know, almost no understanding of how the media works. Several kids I spoke to thought that reporters could basically just publish to the website whatever they wanted, which is hilarious.
I'm cringing as you say that. I'm just like,
inform them about editors.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, you know, they basically assume that every article has a bias or a slant. And it's assumed that, you know, no media is neutral because no person is neutral. And sort of that's the baseline assumption that they're working with.
So why is this interesting to you, and interesting more broadly? Because it feels like on one hand, someone could say, well, you know, it's kind of what we do anyway on social media. We debate and discuss and post things and tweet and Facebook. What makes this so unique?
I think it's different in several ways. Obviously, you know, social media is a huge platform for debate. I think for the most part, that debate is contentious and people are very set in their ways. Like I said before, it's very rare for people to change their minds. And many, many kids are changing their minds on issues. And some of them are, you know, being radicalized through these accounts, too. It's not always a positive thing that they're changing their minds.
I'm interested in the fact that I wonder how many of these kids, like, how do they get to the point where they trust these accounts? Because, as you mentioned, there is so much distrust and lack of information, not just distrust, but there's also a profound lack of understanding of how the media works and the steps that you and I and many other of our colleagues have to take to get something online are very different than what we're seeing here. So how do these young people trust these sources, or do they just trust them inherently?
No, they trust these sources for several big reasons. I mean, I think one of the biggest reasons is that it is like they are hearing that information from a peer. They're not hearing it from an adult or a teacher or a news outlet, which they sort of view as removed and, you know, whatever. So they hear it from people that they know and that they trust. But I think that they feel like, you know, if a group of people, you know, say this information is wrong in the comments, then they'll question it. I mean, a lot of these debates don't stem around specific facts. I mean, they'll use facts to, they'll use, you know, sometimes accurate, sometimes inaccurate facts to make their point. But, you know, they might be debating a point like feminism or has the Me Too movement gone too far, things like that, which are sort of more nebulous issues. They're politicized, but they're not like, there isn't necessarily one factually right answer. So, you know, which I think is positive. It's not like they're, you know, posting, you know, very wrong numbers about something. It's more like different views. They're just sharing their different views. I mean, one girl, for instance, said that she used to not, you know, she used to believe that white people couldn't experience racism. And thanks to a, you know, a comment thread on her Flop account, she now thinks that white people can experience racism and there's such a thing as reverse racism. And, you know, she believes that white people are oppressed.
That's Taylor Lorenz, staff writer at The Atlantic, always with the interesting stories. Thank you for being with us, Taylor.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And hey, guys, if you're on Instagram, check out the Takeaways account. We're posting all sorts of behind-the-scenes pictures and lots of information that just adds to what we're doing on air. We'll see you there.